everybody has an opinion of what we're going to do this morning. They have an expectation. And I've taught the book of Proverbs many times for a reason. But as you begin to grow in God, you see things differently. And as Lois and I was talking this week, she asked me what I was going to do, and I said, I'm going back to the book of Proverbs again. Now, I know the church world teaches that Proverbs, you know, Job, Psalms, Proverbs, Ecclesiastes, and the Song of Solomon are all poetry books. They have no idea what they truly are. They're books of wisdom. It has nothing to do with singing and all that stuff. It's all covering that the church world plays with, but not the reality of the wisdom that's really here. And Lois had an opinion of what went on, and I won't get into all that. She just told me something that she felt about it. And I said, that's okay. Everybody's got a right to their own opinion. But when you come in with a preconceived idea, how much benefit can you gather? And what I'm saying this to is to anyone, not just the ones in this room, but anybody that sets down with a preconceived idea that you already know what's going to be spoken, or you already know all you can gather from this, you're shorting yourself. See, you're cutting off that flow to yourself to hear this spiritual truth. And what I'll say this morning are things that I've never said before, because I see things in a much wider, clearer vision view than I ever had before. And it continues to go that way. And this is nothing. I'm not taking a whack at my wife. She knows better than that. I'm saying this to everybody, because everybody has these ideas sometimes. We sit down with a preconceived idea. We know what we're going to say. I don't know what I'm going to say sometimes. All I know is when I do my work that I have to do to study and prepare for something, when I begin to speak, things can be added to it by the Spirit. Because I don't think I'm complete in everything that I do. But the Spirit of God is complete, and He will take it to where it needs to be for today. Okay, wherever we are. So what I'm saying is we need to start with a clean slate, everything. Because there's a whole lot here that I have never seen before. And I'm sure there's going to be a lot more come out of it. Okay?
Otherwise, we're looking through
that, looking at a glass dimly, right? We're not seeing the depths of what is really here. And I'm saying there is a lot of things here that I've never seen prior to this. And so it's just like a whole new seeing of this book. Now, what is the title of this book? Is that the legitimate or realistic title it should be? Well, you want me to tell you what it really is? It's not the Proverbs of Solomon. No, it's the parables. It's a parable. Okay? Now, I don't know why in the Old Testament, I mean, the writers, when they translated this, they have religious words, proverbs, some spiritual significance to using that word. No, it's just religion. It's a parable. The whole book is a parable. The whole Bible is a parable, and they just don't understand it. See, that was something God hid for us to find out. He could have matched all this thing up and make this book look perfectly united all the way through. But he didn't, because he wants us to study to show ourselves approved, doesn't he? And a wise servant will have rule over the sons that cause shame, won't they? And they'll have part of the inheritance. The inheritance is knowing him. It's the glory of God to conceal the word, and the honor of kings is to search it out. See? So when we search it out, we find things and we begin to fellowship with God. That's what this is all about. So when we look at this book of what they call Proverbs, which is a book of parables, right? I'll first read this thing, and then we're going to come back and break it down again. The Proverbs of Solomon, the son of David, king of Israel, to know wisdom and instruction, to perceive the words of understanding, to receive the instruction of wisdom, justice, judgment, and equity, to give subtlety to the simple, to the young man knowledge and discretion. A wise man will hear and will increase learning. A man of understanding shall attain unto wise counsels. To understand a proverb and the interpretation, the words of the wise and their dark sayings. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and instruction. My son, hear the instruction of your father and forsake not the law of thy mother. For they shall be an ornament of grace to your head and chains about your neck. My son, if sinners entice you, consent thou not. If they say, come with us, let us lay wait for blood, let us lurk privily for the innocent without cause. Let us swallow them up alive as the grave, and whole as those that go down to the pit. We shall find all precious substance. We shall fill our houses with spoil. Cast in your lot among us. Let us all have one purse. My son, walk now not in the way of them. Refrain thy foot from their path. For their feet run to evil, and they make haste to shed blood. Surely in vain the net is spread in the sight of any bird. And they lay wait for their own blood. They lurk privily for their own lives. So are the ways of every one that is greedy of gain, which takes away the life of the owners thereof. Wisdom cries without. She utters her voice in the streets. She cries in the chief places of the concourse, in the openings of the gates, in the city of she utters her words. How long, you simple ones, will you love simplicity? And the scorners delight in their scorning, and fools hate knowledge. Turn you at my reproof. Behold, I will pour out my spirit to you. I will make known my words to you. Because I have called and you refused, I have stretched out my hand and no man regarded. But you have set at naught all my counsel and would none of my reproof. I also will laugh at your calamity. I will mock when your fear comes. When your fear comes as desolation and your destruction comes as a whirlwind. When distress and anguish come upon you, then shall they call upon me, but I will not answer. They shall seek me early, but they shall not find me. For they hated knowledge and did not choose the fear of the Lord. They would none of my counsel. They despised all my reproof. Therefore shall they eat of the fruit of their own way and be filled with their own devices. For the turning away of the simple shall slay them, and the prosperity of fools shall destroy them. But whoso hearkens unto me shall dwell safely and shall be quiet from fear of evil. Now let's go back and see what the Spirit of God shows us in the language that's hidden and in the understanding of the Spirit. King James did what he was supposed to, so we're not mad at King James. He just didn't do a complete job. Or I guess he did do a complete butcher job, but anyway, we'll look at it and see what God's got for us. Okay, the Proverbs of Solomon. What does Solomon's name mean? The root word comes from shalom. What's it tell you?
Peace.
Peace. There you go. So Solomon's name is representing what? Peace, or being peaceful. So when it says the Proverbs, or literally the parables of peace, hello? That's what this book is. It's a book of taking you to peace. If you understand these wisdoms, it will take you to a place where you're not concerned with the worldly things and the happenings and the, what do they call them, the current events of the world. You know, we're not concerned with that. We're not concerned with the elections of politicians or the financial situations of the world or all this global warming stuff. I'm not concerned with it. I'm only concerned with me understanding and helping someone else understand the peace of God in your life. That's all we're at. We get to the peace of God, the rest of the stuff don't mean anything. So it's the parables of peace. The son of David, and he was who? He was beloved, and he was the third king of Israel. Solomon was, wasn't he? And then David was his father. And he was beloved of God, the king of Israel. And what's the word Israel come to? What does it really mean? God prevails. God gets his way. If God prevails, guess what we do? We have to fail. No, if God prevails, we have to fail in our thinking. See what I'm saying? If God prevails, then we're going to come to peace, yes, but our own natural thinking process must fail. Carnal mind must fail. The mind of Christ prevails. Yeah, what's your identity? Are you the natural man, or are you the Genesis man? The Genesis man was the beginning, not Adam, but in spirit. Huh? I prevailed because my father prevailed. I can't lose. That's what we got to understand. Okay, he says, now this is what it is. This is the label, the parables of Solomon, or the parables of peace. Okay, he tells you that, and then he says, here's the purpose of this thing. Here's the purpose of this whole writing. Not just this first chapter, but the whole writing of this book of Proverbs. To know wisdom and instruction, right? Well, the word instruction isn't correct. The word instruction should be discipline. To know wisdom and discipline. You know how you know discipline? There's another word that you're not hearing in there. It's called experience. See? You have to experience discipline, don't you?
That's how you gain wisdom.
is by the experience of it, see? It says, to know the wisdom and discipline, to perceive the words of understanding. It's to know wisdom and instruction and to perceive the words of understanding. That's not the natural understanding, is it? This is the spiritual understanding. Verse 3, it goes on, to receive. To know, perceive, and to receive. And this word instruction, again, is discipline. See, if we know and perceive this stuff, if we know the wisdom and discipline to perceive the words of understanding, then we'll receive the discipline of wisdom. Because wisdom will discipline, won't it? Beg pardon? Yep. And then guess what you do in the fourth verse? You'll give it. See that? Neat, isn't it? Okay. But you to receive the discipline of wisdom, justice, or literally righteousness. The word justice, there should be righteousness and judgment. Now, and equity. But what's the word judgment mean to everybody? Punishment. Punishment. See, get even with them. But justice has a positive and a negative. And I know what my big brother did on the cross, and I know what his judgment was on the world. It was, Father, forgive them because they're ignorant. They don't know what they're doing. See? So there's a positive here that most people don't see in justice or judgment. And the fourth verse, once you've got through the knowing and receiving, perceiving and receiving, you give subtlety. And you know what the word subtlety means? It's not subtlety. No, it's discretion. To give discretion to the simple, huh? I understand. I understand this because if you're reading one thing, it's not the same, you know, in other translations, so it makes it difficult. But I'm trying to line it up the best I can give to you. That fourth verse, it says, to give not subtlety, but discretion to the what? Not simple, but the naive. That King James uses the word simple, but it's not really in the language. It should say naive. Okay? When someone's naive, they're pretty gullible, aren't they? And they'll suck up anything. And that's what's wrong with the church world. See, they've not studied to show themselves approved, a workman that needeth not be ashamed, rightly dividing or accurately handling the scriptures, so they'll believe anything. I had a gentleman this week told me, he said, we were talking about something, and somebody said, well, you shouldn't talk about politics or religion. You should never argue them. I said, I don't argue them. I discuss them. I said, but argument is a legitimate word because argument's giving two opposing opinions and trying to figure out what's the right one, you know. That's considered an argument. But in our society today, argument's being mad at each other, and that's not what I'm talking about, but we should be able to discuss it. And he said, we should be able to agree to disagree agreeably. I said, you're absolutely right. And then he made this statement about hell. And I said, well, look, what you just said right now, I do not agree with you. I said, because you don't understand what this is. I do. I can tell you about this word hell and the roots of where it came from out of religion, which God never even told the Jewish people about hell, and they're the ones that received the scriptures. And I said, this is what man made, and hell didn't come about for a long time. And now we've got this concept of hell and a burning place in the earth where you're going to go when you die. And he said, this man said to me, I went to church. I was raised up in a church when I was a kid, and I believe in hell, and there's nothing you can do to change it. He said, furthermore, I don't want to be changed. And I said, so you're telling me you want to walk around ignorant. He just told me that it didn't make any difference. Even if we disagreed, we could still be friends. But the atmosphere in the room changed. The degree dropped about 15, 20 degrees, the temperature of the room. Yeah. I asked him, I said, who do you hate so bad that you want to torment him there? See? There you go. Say somebody put you there, maybe. But anyway, he didn't understand the ignorance, and there was no sense arguing with him because he wouldn't hear it. He said, I don't want to hear anything about it because I'm right. And I said, well, the arrogance of thinking that someone's right without ever knowing anything about it. See, you heard someone say it. I said, you have never studied the scriptures to see what God says about that. No. I said, see, that shows ignorance. That's ignorant. And that's okay because the Bible says let the ignorant be. And if you want to be ignorant, you can stay there if you want to. But you have the opportunity to have the knowledge to go on beyond that if you want it. But I'll leave that alone. You can fix ignorance, but stupid goes to the grave with you. To the young man, he says in verse 4, after he says to give discretion to the simple, the young man knowledge and discretion. So see, you don't have to be an old man to have discernment, discretion, wisdom, knowledge. God's design is to give it to you as a young man. To enlighten the man so he can pursue his life and live the way God wants him to. But without that knowledge, he can only live as the natural beast that he was created as in the natural. And he goes on to break this down a little bit, and it says a wise man. It should be the wise man. Now, nope. But it is implied in the language. It really is. It says the wise. And you know what that really shows right there? I want to make sure that I don't get away from where I was at. Make sure I get it right. The wise. This word comes from the root. You know what it is? Shama. The one, it should say, the ones that hear with the intent to respond. It's the word shama. The wise person, the wise man, it's in there really, will hear and will increase learning. A wise man will increase his learning, and a man of understanding will not shall attain, but will acquire wise counsels. Okay?
That reflects on the man you were speaking to this week.
Right.
He can't hear.
He didn't want to. So he didn't want to. He said he didn't. I don't want to change. I'm right where I want to be. That's good. You stay right there. Let the ignorant be ignorant. So just let him stay there. He said, now, you'll understand. You said you will attain or acquire wise counsels. And look, it starts there. To do what? Why will you get the wise counsel? To understand the parable. Not the proverb, but to understand the parable. And a parable is a fictitious statement used to bring about a spiritual truth. And the interpretation, okay? And what's the word interpretation mean? What do you think? I bet this word don't mean what you think interpretation means. To interpret some dream or interpret something, that's not what it means. This word interpretation here is to understand the parable and the double meanings. That's what the word says. Yeah, there's a double meaning to it, see? That's what a parable is. It has a physical, spirit, a natural, and a spiritual meaning to it. But this word interpretation is double meanings. The words of the wise and their what? Double meanings, see? Now, let me say it again. I messed up. Hold up a minute. I got to back up a second because I got two things turned around here. Put my finger on the wrong mark. And I got my own little interpretation things and I put on the wrong mark. To understand the parable and the figure, not interpretation here, should be figure or shadow. Okay? The word interpretation should be figure or shadow. I will correct myself. I made a mistake. I just slipped there. My finger slipped down on the wrong one. So to understand the figure or the shadow, right? And we know the Bible is full of shadows and types, allegories, parables, metaphors, all that stuff. Okay, and the words of the wise and their dark sayings, and that dark saying is the double meanings. The double meaning goes with their dark sayings. So he said that's what it is. To know wisdom and instruction, to perceive the words of understanding, to receive the discipline, to give the discretion to the naive, right? And he tells you that a wise man will hear and will increase. A man of understanding will acquire wise counsel to understand, and that wise counsel will help you understand the parable and the figures and shadows, the words of the wise and their double meanings. Right? Okay, verse 7. And then he goes on and says, the fear of the Lord. Now he's setting you up. This is all symbolic, isn't it? He's setting you up to let you know that everything you're going to hear is symbolism. Isn't he telling you that? Because the whole purpose of this writing as a parable is to know that there's a double meaning, and most people have no idea that there is a double meaning. So he says, the fear of the Lord. Now, the word fear is not correct. We all know that. You're not supposed to be afraid of your father, are you? The reverence of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. If I reverence God, that's the beginning of knowledge. That shows you're not too stupid, right? But fools do what? Despise or disrespect wisdom and discipline. Do you know what's wrong with this world today? No discipline, not even in the natural. See, because the natural It's what comes first. The spiritual doesn't come first, according to the Apostle Paul. It's not the spiritual first, but it's the natural, and that teaches you about the spiritual. If the natural has no discipline, do you think the spiritual would have any discipline? See? Doesn't take long to figure that out. So he goes on into verse 8 and says, "My son, hear the instruction," or the discipline. It should be discipline again. "My son, shama," the discipline of the Father. Do you hear that? Hear with the intent to respond, the discipline of your Father. There you go. That's the only way we answer it, isn't it? Amen. Yes, sir. "And forsake or reject not the instruction," or what? See, the law is instruction, and it's, again, a discipline, isn't it? The discipline of your mother. We know God's our Father. What's our mother? It could be our soul or the church realm, the soulish realm, right? We don't reject that. See, I know that the law that the church put in me began to discipline me in my thinking process. And I know it messed up some things, but it still had some good foundational blocks in it, didn't it? I don't want to go out and destroy all the churches. I want to see people come through the church. I want to see them grow through that realm of being a child and growing into a young adult and growing into a mature son. That's God's purpose. What parent on the face of the earth do not desire their children to be babies to start, grow into young adults, and then grow into mature adults and be productive in society? Well, sure we do. We can't just jump from one to the end of it. We've got to experience it all the way through. And who would think that they wouldn't want their children to do that? Sure. No. For the spiritual son to be born, he has to go against the natural man, doesn't he? So it's going to be painful. And both the mother and the baby are struggling for life at the time of birth. Are they not? Yeah. And the baby can't stay there forever, or it'll kill both of them. Verse 9. The word "for" should be "because." "Because they shall be father and mother." See, that discipline that father gives you, and the instruction or discipline mother gives you, will be an ornament of grace to your head, your mind, and it'll be a necklace about your neck, or about your throat, around your throat. Should say around your throat. A necklace around your throat. It'll be something beautiful to look at, wouldn't it? Verse 10 goes on to say, "My son, if sinners," the guilty. "If the guilty entice you, do not yield." If the guilty entice you, if someone believes, see, most people believe they're sinners. I mean, the world will tell you that. Oh, yeah, I'm a sinner. They don't know why. They just heard somebody tell them they was. Okay. Who told you was naked? Who told you was a sinner? See, that thing between your ears, you bought the lie from somebody else. You were created in the image of God. Which one of us were created outside the image of God? None of us. So, see, we're listening to that lie that was told in the garden. It's the same lie. Who told you were naked? Who told you were uncovered from God?
It's not the external guilt.
It's the internal. The internal that condemns you. So if the guilty entices you, do not yield. If they say, "Come lurk with us, lay wait for blood, let us lurk privily for the innocent without cause, let us swallow them up alive as the grave." I like this one. I like to bring this grave in here. You know what this word "grave" is? It's Sheol. Uh-huh. That's the Hebrew word. So here they didn't interpret it from the Hebrew into the Greek. I mean, from the Hebrew language into the English language. They just went ahead and wrote the Hebrew word down. Now, isn't that duality? They thought it was spiritual to put that Sheol in there. It sounds spiritual. But Sheol means a grave. Now, right here it says so. It's interpreted "grave" in King James. And it says, when you look up that word 7585 in a Strong's Concordance in a Hebrew dictionary section, it will tell you it's the grave. Now, what part of fire and hell and all that stuff is in there? Because it don't have the concept of hell in it. But that's what they interpret it about 30-35% of the time. And look what it says here. "And the whole as those that go down to the" what? To the pit. Now, what's a grave? It's a pit, it's a hole in the ground. Literally, what this word "pit" means, it means a pit hole a well or a cistern. So he says, get them whole, just like someone dropping in a hole. They're already in there. Now, is that telling you they're going to swallow somebody up alive, like they say, come let us swallow them up alive, they want to eat them alive? No. It's just saying we're going to overtake them quickly. How long does it take you to fall into that hole of a well? When you fall, you're down, ain't you? You're down there just instantly. You're down there. And he's saying, let's take them quick. Let's get them off guard. Let's overcome them, you know. And it says in 13, it says, we shall find all precious substance. When we kill them, that's when we'll find this precious substance. Well, I got news for you. There is a lot of substance when you kill somebody. You're going to find out what's really going on. You'll find out who they are. You'll find out who you are. See, and the substance really is in here. They're talking about natural substance, but we're talking about spiritual substance. It said, we shall fill our houses with spoil or booty. Yeah? Go ahead and fill your natural house with stuff, and then you ain't got room for anything else. You got all the natural stuff, but where's the spiritual? Cast in thy lot among us, let us all have one purse. Now let me just think about something. Let's make you think here a minute. Let's picture ourselves a group of people standing around, and everything you got, you throw in a big pile in the middle. And it all belongs to all of us. Does it ever work? See, technically, that's a communistic view. Everybody's equal. Does it work even in a communist country? Because there's still the higher-ups that's got everything, and the little people have nothing. And that's all it does. And that's what we're really coming to in this country. See, the world of this country, right now, we got so many middle-class people that the higher-ups don't like it. They want to have nothing but poor people and rich people. What?
Internally, we're not the same either, because some sons are first fruit.
Absolutely, we're not all the same. Right. We're all equal, but we're not the same. Right. God is no respecter of persons. If God expects me to do something, he's got a job for me. If he's got a job for you, Lloyd, that's different from my job, and he expects you to do one thing, and I got to do 1,000, and you do your one, and I do 999, who gets the reward? You do, see? Because you've done exactly what you were supposed to do. It's not about the number, but it's about doing what we're required to do by God, not by a group of people or a man or anybody like that, but what God has for you to do, that's your accomplishment in life. You've done it, see? That's why he said in the scriptures, if you give someone a drink in the nature or character of a prophet, in the name of a prophet, you have a prophet's reward. Didn't say you was a prophet, did he? But if you do that work, you still have that same reward. And people don't understand it. It's not about doing what you want to do. It's about doing what he wants you to do. And if you do that, huh?
It's doing the will of the Father.
Doing the will of the Father, and that's all it's about. If we do that, we got nothing else to worry about, do we? That's up to him to take up all the slack. We're just supposed to be obedient servants. But it never works when they all kick it into one. Someone's going to take the control, aren't they? He said, my son... Who's he talking to? You as an individual. My son, walk not thou in the way of them. Refrain your foot from their path or their lifestyles. Don't run where they run. And when he says, my son, he's showing there is a difference. Some sons are obedient and some are disobedient. That's the only two classifications God sees you in. But he still loves you all. He'll just have to correct you a little bit down the road somewhere. Somewhere in your life, you'll get corrected. It said, verse 16, because their feet will run to evil and make haste to shed blood. Surely in vain the net is spread in the sight of any bird. He's saying, what good's it do to set a trap for somebody if you see them set the trap? You're going to walk into a trap if they set a trap for you? He's trying to show you right now, if you wise up, you don't have to get set in the trap. He's saying, here's the trap. Here's the trap they're setting for you. Are you still going to be foolish and naive enough to walk in there and get trapped when all you have to do is go through my discipline, listen to my wisdom and my understanding, right? My perceptions of everything, and you don't have to walk into the trap because you'll see the trap. But you got to go against the flow of humanity and religion, especially religion. And they lay wait for their own blood. They lurk privily for their own what? When it says lives here, what the word really is nefesh, which means soulish life. See, because you don't have control over your life. Hello? Your life is spirit. It's not yours. You were bought with a price. But your natural life, he says, they seek their own life. They're killing themselves doing these things, aren't they? They're killing themselves. But you can't kill the spirit. You can only kill the soulish part, the life, the natural life. So are the ways of everyone that is greedy of gain or unjust gain or gain gotten by violence. Okay? Unjust gain. There's nothing wrong with gain. It's the unjust gain, the ones taken by violence and deception and manipulation. That's the wrong one. Which takes away the soul life, and that's what that word there says too, the same as in the verse above, where it said lives. But the life of the owners or the soul life of the owners. Wisdom cries without. She utters her voice in the street. I want to back up and say something again about Sheol that come to my mind. How many of you have ever looked into a dictionary to see what the word Sheol really means? Sheol, it says literally Hades or the world of the dead, including its accessories and its inmates. That's what the Strong's Concordance says about it. It says Hades, and Hades is a Hebrew, I mean, it's a Greek word, which means grave the same way. And it says, or the world of the dead. Now hang on a minute. When we die, they say everybody goes to the grave or to Hades, okay? Well, who don't go there when you die? Because everyone, good or bad, dies, right? So whether we're obedient or disobedient, we still die in this soulless life, don't we? And it goes to this grave place in the natural. And didn't Solomon say in the Old Testament, when we die, in Ecclesiastes, he said, do we not all go to one place? See, I'm seeing it tie together so many more places that we're all going to go to the same place. We're just not going to have the same rewards when we get there. Going to be a whole lot of people disappointed and a whole lot of people really surprised. It's okay. I'm just telling you what this all puts together, okay? Yeah. I don't know. There's going to be some, I think there'll be some surprise people. I really do. It's an emotion. There'll be emotions. They just won't be in control anymore. It says, wisdom cries without. She utters her voice in the streets. She cries in the chief place of the concourse. In the opening of the gates. Wonder what the gates are. It's your eyes, your ears, your mouth. That's how wisdom is attained, isn't it? But your eyes, your ears, and your mouth is how you communicate and receive knowledge, isn't it? Which all is connected to your brain. In the city, she utters words, okay? Wisdom does, in the city. What is the city? Are we not the city? The heavenly Jerusalem that came down from above? Isn't that what the book says in Revelation? Okay. How long, ye simple or naive, how long, you naive ones, will you love being naive? That's a legitimate question, isn't it? Like the gentleman I talked to the other day, I was talking about in hell. He said, "I where I'm at, I like it, and I don't want to change." See, how long will you stay there? And then it goes on, said, scorners. Actually, the word scorner is boasters. And the boasters delight in their bragging. And the arrogant ones hate knowledge.
Ego man.
Well, sure, it's the ego man. But how long will you continue doing these things? Till they put them in the grave. Remember we said stupidity goes to the grave. Stupid goes to the grave. You know, ignorance can be fixed. So God's asking these questions, you know, how long are you going to continue in this stuff, in your natural state? Verse 23 goes on and says, now, return at my proof. This is the key to get out of that mistake that we live in verse 22. This is how we get out of it. This is the key to unlock the door to get back, get out of that prison of carnality and the eye world. Return at my reproof. Not at a preacher telling you you're going to hell if you don't get saved. He said, at my reproof, didn't he? This is the Spirit of God speaking as God. Would you not agree? Anybody that believes in this Bible has got to believe this is God speaking through his man, through David. right? Or Solomon, rather. He said, "Return at my reproof. Behold, I will pour out my spirit to you. I will make known my words to you." Hello. Okay, look what he said. "Return at my reproof. Behold, I will pour out my spirit to you, and I will make known my words to you." Was there any conditions there other than return to me? Return to my reproof? He said, when you return to me, when I call at you and you return to me, I'll do all these things for you. God does them for you. "Because I have called and you refused, I have stretched out my hand. I put all my works to your advantage. And what did you do? And no man what? Regarded." Literally, no man listened or no one paid attention. And boy, today, is that not the perfect picture? The same thing that's been going since the beginning of time. Nothing new under the sun. They're just continuing to disrespect, pay no attention, not to listen to what God says or any of his people says. Verse 25, "But you have said it not," or literally, "you have dismissed all my counsel." You didn't said it not, but you dismissed all my counsel. And where it says, "and would," the word "would" should be "desired." "And desired none of my reproof." And guess what that is again? Correction. And guess what correction is? Discipline. See? "And you desired none of my discipline." In the Proverbs it says, and we'll get there, it says, you should love rebuke and correction. That's discipline. We should love the discipline of God because it makes you a better person. It doesn't mean you want to be a sadist and get beat up all the time, because God don't beat you up. It's in your understanding that you can misconceive his things. Negative, yeah, rather than something as a fix, something to fix you, okay, to repair you. Okay, verse 26. "I also will laugh at your oppression, and I will mock when your fear comes." Now, I didn't like that word mock, so I went to look at it, see what it really said. And it don't say mock. Now, why would God sit there and torment and mock somebody? See, the way we understand mocking, that's not right. So when I went and looked at it, guess what it said? I'm going to read the verse the way it should read. "I will also laugh at your oppression. I will be speaking unintelligibly when your fear comes." Your mind is listening to the natural, and God's speaking what? And didn't Paul say in Corinthians, the natural man receives nothing from the Spirit of God, neither can he, because they are spiritually discerned. Correct? So this man has no way of communicating with God, does he? As long as I stay in the natural realm and do all the natural things, how could I communicate with God?
It's terrible, the same thing fear is, so it's, yeah, it's overtaken.
Sure. And so we have to realize there's nothing we can do about it. All we know is we got to understand and communicate with God. If we can't communicate with God, doesn't the book say, the scriptures say this, that God seeks you to worship him in spirit and truth? Well, if I'm not in the spirit, how am I going to hook up with God? And I don't have to get into some singing and dancing and screaming and yelling and running around the church and flopping in the floor and hanging on the chandeliers and on the fans to get God worked up in me. God is present in me and God is present in you. And all you have to do is honor and respect God, and God is there at all times. God has never left you. He's never forsaken you. That's not New Testament. That's from the beginning, from Old Testament. He said God will never leave you nor forsake you. And that's Old Testament words, not New Testament. That you had to get saved before God got in you. God's been in you from the very beginning. You just weren't aware of it because you bought into the lie that the church tells you you got to get saved before God will come and live in your house. That's a lie. He died that he could, wherever he was, you could be also. He's living in you and you can be inside of you in that spirit realm too. That's why he died on the cross. So that the two could live together as one. And wasn't that his prayer in John 17? Come on. Mock means I will be speaking unintelligibly. So God will be speaking unintelligibly whenever their fear comes upon them. They're says, "I will laugh at your oppression. I will be speaking unintelligibly when your fear or your terror comes upon you." Because they're going to be so shook up in the natural, their emotions will be running so high, they won't be able to hear God, will they? Still small voice, right? In verse 27 it says, "When your fear or your terror comes as what? a storm, really is what it should say, and your destruction, or literally oppression, comes as a hurricane, when distress and anguish come upon you, then shall they call upon me, but I will not respond. And he says, will not answer. No, he said, I won't respond. I will not react to your natural pleas. Okay? They shall seek me early. Now, you know, the book says to seek him early so he can be found. But this word early is not correct. See, they just tied it to something else and it's not correct. They shall seek me when? At dawn. The word literally says at dawn. At daybreak. See, and that's what everybody thinks. If you look for God real early in the morning, that's when he's up. the lights are just starting to come on then. But they shall not find me, he said. Search me at dawn, but they shall not find me. Verse 29, because, he said, they're not going to find me because, verse 29, they hated knowledge, and that's the knowledge of God, and they did not choose the reverence of the Lord. They hated the knowledge of God and they choose not to reverence God. That's the whole thing. That's why they can't hear him, because they want to live in their I world, the ego world of man, don't they? Verse 30. They desired or accepted, the word would should be desired or accepted, none of my counsel. They despised all my correction or discipline. They didn't want to be disciplined, okay? I'll give you your heart's desire. Didn't he say that? You don't want my desire? You don't want my discipline and correction? I'll just give you what you want. Now watch what it says. Therefore they shall eat of the fruit of their own lifestyle. Absolutely. And you will be filled with your own purposes. You're going to reap what you sow. If you sow to the flesh, you're going to reap corruption. If you sow to the spirit, you reap the life of the ages. It's so simple. When God opens it up. Verse 32. For the what? The turning away. Literally is the word apostasy. Because the apostasy. Is what it should say. Because the apostasy of the naive. Not simple. But the naive shall slay them. You just sit there and do nothing in your own life. Say, well, I don't want to make a decision. Well, you just made one. To not make a decision is making a decision not to do anything, isn't it? So it's a hypocrisy to even think that. But the apostasy of the naive shall slay them, and the prosperity, or the false security, is what it should say, of the fools, or the stupid, the simple, and the arrogant, is what the language really says.
New King James says complacency.
Okay. And that's what the prosperity, that word prosperity, or is false security. And the word fools is stupid, simple, and arrogant, shall destroy them. They're false securities. They're locked up. Just like that man told me, I already know what hell is, and you can't change me, and I don't want to be changed because I like what it is. Okay? That will destroy him, won't it? But see, it's in ignorance. I know he's saying ignorance, and maybe someday God will change that. But right now, his point is he's ignorant. Sure it is. Absolutely. And the man don't go to church, don't never serve God in any way whatsoever, lives like anybody else in the world, but he says he knows everything about God. Well, how could you do that? Because if you truly believe something, you'll be living that. And he's living hell because he believes in hell. Right between his ears. Okay, where am I at? Verse 33. But whosoever hearkeneth, guess what that word is? Shammah. Hear intelligently with the intent to respond to me, shall what? Dwell safely? That's not what it says. Shall permanently, dwell permanently in safety. That sounds better, don't it? Living in safety today ain't the same as dwelling permanently in safety, is it? And shall be what? Be quiet from fear. And the word quiet should be at rest. And shall be at rest from terror of evil, the terror of evil. It should be terror. I know. None of the translations are going to be absolutely correct 100%. You have to realize there's none of them, and that's why you got to study to make it come to life for you. Now, I'm not saying anything of this. That's not what I've ever taught before. I've never saw the depths of this before and how important this book can be to us. And people read it, oh, they just read the words and say, yeah, I read Proverbs today, I'm smart. No, he told you that first chapter breaks down and tells you what this is all about. I showed you that from the beginning, didn't I? The purpose and the progression of what you're going to go through. And he said it's a process. And no, we're not going to be smart. I've read this book of Proverbs hundreds of times, the whole book. And it didn't teach me a lot of wisdom. I could quote words. But now as I teach wisdom. Do you know how to use what the knowledge that God has given us? Use that wisdom. The gift of using that is wisdom. See? Knowledge won't help you much unless you have the ability to use it. And that's what I want you to see in this book of Proverbs now. That you can take this and apply it to your life every day of your life. Every day.